Welcome to the Slow Pitch Podcast. For those of you who don't know, I'm Lane.
Hey, and I'm Rob.
Today we have a question from someone in Colorado. He's asking us about an emerging technology, but what he really wants to know is what are some of the pain funnel questions he should ask to get early adopters to buy?
Yeah, that sounds interesting. And the best part is it doesn't matter if it's an emerging technology, an old technology, or just shoes. If you're selling shoes, it doesn't really matter. We're going to talk about the pain funnel questions that you should be asking, whether it's an emerging technology or not. Let's get started.
You're listening to the Slow Pitch Podcast, a podcast about selling less and closing more.
All right, so let's get into what the question is that this person that wrote us is. It's a very interesting question. There's a lot of detail in here, which is kind of cool. So, Lane, you want to read the question for us? Because I know you're really good at that.
Sure, Rob. Chris in Central Colorado wrote us. He says, our company's helping to take to market a line of electric vehicle charging stations. They're not the manufacturer, but they're licensed reseller of the product. The product comes in several sizes, from residential units to medium size and large commercial fast charging units. He says, with the aggressive adoption from the big three automakers, as well as automakers across the globe, my target market appears to be early adopters. Early adopters are mavens and will purchase based on emotions. With this in mind, I believe that over the next couple of years, early adopters will likely be my target market. I feel like I should ignore B2B for now and focus on B2C during the early adopter stage. By the time the early majority comes around, I'll be much better positioned for B2B. My question is, what are some pain funnel questions that would likely result in these people buying from me? Who are these early adopters? What are their pains? He goes on, says, early adopters are different than people who will be buying later when the market is more established and accepted. I'd be interested in knowing which social media you think I will find my target audience based on early adopter mentality.
All right. There's a lot of questions that come up, and it's not so much that he wasn't clear, because I think there's a lot of good information in here, but there's several questions that I start to think about. So Lane, when you think about the electric vehicle charging station, that implies several things. One of which is, hey, you have an electric car. In order to have a vehicle charging station, you probably need the car, right? So my first question,
I think, right? One comes with the other. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd probably need, let's put it this way. If you have an electric vehicle charging station, you don't have to have the car. But if you have the car, you probably need the charging station, right? So
yeah,
one is dependent on the other, let's say. So based on that, I think I would start my questioning with, for, let's say for you, Lane, if I was to sell you an electric car, this is Chris's target audience, those folks who have an electric vehicle. And those, right, or those who want one. So Lane, let's role play this out here then and say, if you were to buy an electric car, if I was trying to sell you an electric car, what would be a reason that you would tell me, I don't feel comfortable buying an electric car yet?
You know, I don't know a whole lot about electric cars, Rob. But you know, the questions that come to my mind immediately, a lot of them revolve around battery life, and some on value. But battery life, you know, how many times can the battery in the car be recharged? How far can I drive on a charge? How long does it take to recharge? Where can I find charging stations? I take for granted that I get in my car, I could just drive where I want to go, whether it be across the street or across the state. My concern with an electric car is I don't know that I can do that.
Yeah, and I think that's a common question. You know, after getting this question, I started to look online to say, okay, let me analyze. These are some of the questions I had too. Like, how far can I go in there? So there's cars that can go a good 300 miles easy on a charge, not a problem. And some vehicles that can do, you know, a couple hundred miles and then flip over to regular gasoline. So there's levels and variations. But I think one of Chris's points along the way here is that this is coming. Whether you realize it or not, the electric vehicle is on its way. It's going to be a reality. And the more that I started to do a little digging, I found that there were some interesting stats in terms of, just to put it in perspective, that article that I found from the BBC, it said that Jaguar plans to sell only electric cars starting in 2025.
What, 2025? Wow.
That's 4 years from now. That's crazy. And I didn't know that. Volvo, from 2030 is when they want to start selling 100% electric cars. And Lotus said they will do it by 2028.
Lotus.
Yeah, Lotus, which is kind of crazy. You'd think, well, boy, you're going to run through a battery really fast with that, right? But, you know, that's kind of, these are premium cars. So most of the people listening probably would say, well, I'll never buy a Lotus anyway, so who cares? Here's the next thing. General Motors says it will make only electric vehicles by 2035. And Ford is saying that by 2030, all their vehicles that are sold in Europe are going to be electric. And even Volkswagen said 70% of their sales will be electric vehicles by 2030. So to me, we're on the precipice of this brand new thing that's coming. And yeah, whether you like it or not, this is happening. Now, I've always been excited about, I've always wanted to get a hybrid because I think it's efficient and yet it's quiet. Yeah. It's this, it's that, all these different things. I think it's pretty cool. But then all these questions came up, especially in the early part of when Toyota came out with a Prius and Chevy comes out with a Volt. Like, well, what happens if my battery dies while I'm driving across the state? Or can I even make it up the mountain if I'm driving in Colorado? Like, Chris, I'd be concerned if I was driving a Chevy Volt up a mountain. I'm going to have to turn around and like coast down. That's what it feels like. I'd be afraid of that, right? So, and where am I going to be able to find a charging station in the middle of nowhere? And that's the concern that I think a lot of people have. I know that's a question that I have. And I think I would start my whole conversation with you, Chris, would be, you say that early adopters, in your email, you said early adopters are mavens and will purchase based on emotions. And I say that is incorrect thinking. I only say it's incorrect because I think early adopters are not the only ones that buy that way. I think everybody buys that way. And let me explain. If you want something, that means you have an emotional attachment towards that purchase. You don't buy things because you have to, with the exception of gasoline and different things like that, that are very inelastic, right? So you have to buy certain things and there's no choice in the matter. But when you think of regular purchases that you're going to buy outside of groceries and those, if you're going to buy a car, even when you buy a refrigerator, what's the most important features and benefits, things that you're looking for in a refrigerator? It needs to have this, it needs to have that. Energy rating, storage, how the shelves fit in. Where do I put my milk? All these questions that you start, well, this has got to be ease of use, right? Those are emotional things for you. So I don't really buy the fact that early adopters are buying on emotions any more than any other group. I think the emotional connection that they have is they kind of want to be like the Apple people, which is, hey, this is the newest and greatest, and they're attaching their identity to that. That I agree with, but it's not any different than anybody else buying because it's still an emotional thing. So if you're going to know that early adopters are going to be purchasing early or emerging market style things or products because they're attaching their identity to it, that is a pain question in and of itself. Like, my question to Lane would be, all right, you're looking at an electric vehicle. Why do you want an electric vehicle? And you'd have to answer that question. So let's role play through this. Lane, you want to buy an electric vehicle. What would be one of the reasons you want that? Help me understand that.
For me, I'm interested in an electric vehicle for it's green.
Mm-hmm.
You're not polluting. I'm hoping, and I don't know the facts because I haven't really looked into it. My hope would be charging it, an electric vehicle is less expensive than buying gas. You know, the maintenance, I don't know, do I not need to change the oil anymore? I have a lot of questions that just because I don't know anything about the electric vehicle, but likely maintenance as well, though. Do I have to maintain the battery? Is there something I have to do?
Yeah, and I bet these are all questions that people that are just starting out would ask the same question. Like, how often does the oil, is there oil? I don't know. There probably is, right? There's some engine component that needs to get turned. So all those things are there. But the questions that start to ask back when I ask that question, those are questions that you, Chris, need to start to think about. How do you address those as you go through this? So I think early in my thinking in this letter or email that you sent us, one of my questions back to you is, have you spent time at car dealerships? Anybody that sells an electric vehicle, I would go in and I would go talk to some of the salespeople and I would pretend to be buying an electric vehicle. And I would, at some point in their questioning, when they're asking you, you would say, what are some of the other questions that people ask you about this vehicle or about electric vehicles that I'm not asking? They'll tell you all the features, benefits, all the things that are really important to them as a salesperson. Okay, that's helpful. Now you could follow that up with, How many people ask that you that question? How many people ask you about X question, Y question, whatever it is? So if they're telling you about the ease of charging it overnight and it's ready for a full day of travel the next day, how many people are asking you that question? Or because it has a computer on board and I can do this, this, and this, or it can drive by itself, or all the, what are the questions that they're asking you, salesperson, that you can now take and put in your arsenal for your charging station sales process? So you're going to need to understand what those early adopters are asking. So if I was going new into the sales process and learning how to sell these products, your vehicle charging stations, I would literally go out on sales calls and I would just start asking people questions and ask them to ask me questions. I might ask, so if I'm going to your house, Lane, and I'm saying, all right, I think you have an electric vehicle. Hey, listen, we're putting in electric vehicle stations into homes, particularly those that may end up buying an electric vehicle or who have an electric vehicle and haven't bought the station yet for home. Are you interested in answering some questions that I have for you? And then you might ask some questions back. Or would you be comfortable with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And most people would. And then in that conversation, you're going to make them ask you questions back so that their confusion, their questions that they have, you're going to get a better idea of what their concerns are. Take that data and information and start to boil down what are the questions you should be asking to help them fight that problem. So one of the questions that Lane even mentioned earlier was the battery life. And when Lane says, I'm concerned about the battery life, I don't know how many recharge cycles it's going to have, how far is it going to drive, those types of things. When he starts asking those questions, what I might say to Lane is like, well, you said you're concerned about the number of recharge cycles. Tell me, why are you asking about that? I'm just curious. What does that mean to you? What's the concern?
For me, it's, when am I going to have to replace the battery in this car? It's just like my phone. If I've had to learn to not let my battery get down below 20% and whatnot. I have to maintain the battery health of my phone to maximize its life. I understand I'm going to have to do the same for a car. So I want to understand what that means.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good question. What do you think the answer would be to the question of how many recharge cycles there are?
It's probably thousands.
Thousands. How many years would it take or months or days? What do you think it's going to take to get to thousands of recharge cycles?
Oh gosh. In pandemic days, years.
Yeah.
Decades, maybe.
Maybe decades.
In reality, when everything's back to normal, if you're commuting to and from work every day, there's a good possibility that you're maybe talking about 5 years.
Just 5 years. You think it would be any longer or shorter?
I think that depends on the person, but I think 5 years is probably a pretty average in my mind of if you get 2,000 full recharge cycles off your vehicle, best case, I would look at 5 years. And what's that going to cost me to replace that battery in that car?
Yeah. I ask that question back because I want to see how important that is to you. Right. And so when I start to listen to you talking, 5 years seems to be about what you think it's going to take to run that battery out and need to get a new one. In asking that question and then doing a quick Google search, I'm finding that online, the answer according to TrueCar.com, and again, I don't know the value of that website necessarily, but they're talking about a normal electric car battery lasts about 10 years. It can last. So is that really what it is? I don't know. Let's say it's 8. So let's say if I know this information already, and I'm Chris, and I know it's going to be 8 years minimum. You're not going to run that thing out before 8 years, unless you're driving that thing every day, up and down, up and down, up and down, like charge to dead every day, constantly. Let's say most people don't do that. So if I knew that, am I going to tell Lane, it's actually 8 years. No, I'm not. What I'm going to answer back when he says 5, I would say, where did you get 5? Blah, blah, blah. Have you ever done any in research on that? No, I haven't. Okay. What would you think if I said to you that the studies that have been done so far suggest that batteries can last for an electric vehicle approximately 10 years. And so let's say for safety's sake, it's actually 8, just because I don't want to assume that it's actually 10. Let's say the research was off a little bit and it's perfect conditions, blah, blah, blah. If it's 8 years, well, how long do you usually how long do you usually own your car?
I drive my cars till they're dead, but I would think 8 to 10 years is probably about the as long as I would probably have a car. So, and a lot of people are going to change every five or six or seven. So,
yeah, there's a lot of people that do leases, right? So yep. If you think about if they lease or if they buy, 5 to 8 years, I don't think I've ever owned a car 8 years in total. I don't think I've ever owned a car that long. I've had one close, wow. But I've never had it for quite that long because it starts to get to mileage. It starts to get this, it starts to get that. And usually the battery is not the issue. And obviously this wasn't the issue before.
Yeah.
But even the car battery that, you know, starts and everything else, that has never really been the issue. Every once in a while it does, but the parts that are wear and tear, those are the pieces that really get bogged down. The tires, all those other things. So when I think about a car battery and if it's going to last 8, let's say, or 10 years, that's a question that I would ask back is, what if it lasted 8? How long do you usually have a car now? Or, and some of those people that lease, if I knew that they're a leasing kind of a person and I knew they said the answer was 5, and I would ask, well, how many years do you usually lease your vehicle? And they go, well, usually it's a 3-year lease, or usually it's a 5-year lease, whatever that is. It's usually less than 5, right? I mean, there's usually not a 10-year lease. They don't want to do that. The car dealership doesn't want to do that. So it's usually a short-term thing anyway. So the next question would be, well, what does it matter if it's only 5 years and you're giving it back in 5? It's still running. What's the difference, right? So like, that's the question that you start to do. So you start to think about what are the questions that they have? How far can you drive on a charge? So Lane, how far do you think you can drive on a charge?
I'm going to guess probably somewhere average, probably 200 to 300 miles. What does Google tell you?
It's all over the board.
Yeah. It depends on the car. There's a lot of factors. Yeah.
So when you look at how far does a car drive, and the distance can be shorter or longer depending on the type of vehicle and so forth. But then my question at some point, if I've learned that, you know, I think that the car is going to make me go 300 miles and that's off because it's only 200, or if they tell me 200 and that's actually 400, there's ways to ask those questions a little bit differently. But the more that you learn what their concern and what their question is as a buyer, the more that you need to position that question a little differently so that you understand and they get to know what the real answer is without you telling them. Because nobody wants to be told that what they think is somebody telling them what they want to hear. So imagine if you're in sales and you're telling somebody, no, listen, the car, it'll drive you 300 miles. Are you going to believe them?
Probably not. Yeah.
Because it's like, you're just trying to sell me the car. Come on. I know better than that. But when you go look at it and you find out it's, you know, 289 miles and they say, well, it can get you almost 300 miles if you use it right. That's pretty accurate. But you did your research already as a buyer, you know what the real numbers are. So as a salesperson, your questions need to generate their answers so you know what they already know. They're going to tell you 289 miles is what I found out by this particular car. Okay, 289 miles. How far do you think you're going to drive this car? Because most people that buy electric cars stay in the city that they're in. They don't usually drive them long distances. That's not what they're for. They're for driving short distances, because when they go long distances, they're either renting a car that's needed for whatever the reason, like a moving van, that kind of thing, or they're flying. That's usually what happens. Or they're taking a train, right? But whatever that reason is, those cars, those electric cars are used locally and not much more than that. So if I understand what they're doing and how they're using it, I can get to know that better. So the more that I know that, the more likely I am to be able to sell this charging station so that they have a better positioning. All that aside, I go on to the next point, which is you talk about B2B versus B2C. And when I say you, I mean you, Chris. B2B or B2C. B2B is, I'm assuming B2B would be what?
Yeah, for these charging stations, store owners, malls, office building owners, things like that.
Yeah, property owners, and that kind of landlords, condo buildings, right? That's what I think of too. You know, even mall, big malls, strip malls, whatever. And B2C, I think of just being homeowners. That's how I see it.
I would agree. Yeah.
Okay, I may not be correct in what he's thinking, but that's what my feeling is. So he says, I think we should be focused on the B2C so that I'm better positioned for B2B. My gut tells me that B2C is a difficult sale to make. And I don't mean difficult in terms of like, it's a big dollar, it's too much money, blah, blah, blah. Because if you have an electric car and you need one, and you know, this is an image, this is a whole thing, all that stuff that you're going through, those are the things you're going to need to buy anyway. So you're going to be able to position it that way. But if you're looking at it from a, how am I going to grow my business or how am I going to grow my sales business kind of a thing, I'm looking at it thinking I would go to B2B. And here's why. B2B buyers tend to be more analytical. They tend to be a little bit more of, how do I, what's the value and the benefit for me to buy this for my customers, my clients? Now, let's think about that. If you're an apartment complex or you're a condo building and you have the ability to get into that conversation with them, so what are some of the questions that you might ask a condo building, whether or not they'd be interested in talking to you for electric charging stations?
Do they know how many of their current tenants have electric vehicles?
Yep.
Have they had anyone come in that's expressed interest in a charging station?
Yep.
I would imagine if I have an electric vehicle and I'm trying to rent or lease or buy a new place to live, you know, whether a condo or something like that, that's going to be a big thing for me is, you know, I need to find somewhere where I can charge my vehicle.
Yeah, because a homeowner can go buy their own. But when I have a condo, what am I supposed to do with this? And sometimes you have no choice. If you wanted to go to a condo, because this is the type of place you want to live, and there's no charging stations, that's one thing. So there's the things to think about too. If you're an apartment complex, there's two types of apartment complex, in my opinion. There's lower end, average person out there that can afford it. That's fine. But then there's the premium ones. And the premium ones probably are going to be the people that now, at this point in the game, the early adopters, they're going to be finding apartments that are premiums because they have the cash to be able to buy that. And they're going to look for a place that has it. So how much does it cost to put one of these things in versus spreading that across how many apartments you have? Is there 100 apartments? Is there 1,000 apartments? Is there 5 apartments? How many apartments do you have? Is that a value or is that a benefit, right? So asking the question of the apartment complex owner or the condo building owner is kind of going to be the same. Which kind of a complex are you guys trying to be? Are you trying to attract the higher end or are you trying to attract the lower end? And either one is fine. But I just know based on the demographics of the higher end, they're more likely to buy an electric vehicle. It's just sheer numbers, right? It's costly to buy one right now. But based on the stuff that's coming up, you can see that in the next 10 years, it's going to be a little more widespread because you have a lot of these other companies that are manufacturing these things. So you want to start with those higher end apartments, but you're going to definitely want to come back to those lower ones because at some point, the big barrier for electric vehicles is what? Is the price.
Yep.
Like it is soon. I feel like as soon as the price of an electric vehicle drops enough below a gas powered vehicle, things will start to shift very quickly and there'll be a demand that'll start to happen. That's how I feel. So if you're going to position yourself as a B2C, you're now working yourself to death because you're going after the individuals one at a time. And that's really difficult. And so in sales, I always look at it in things in three categories. I look at it, anything that I sell, anything that anybody sells is what's your bread and butter? What are the things that bring you the business that will pay your expenses every month? And you don't have to work really hard because once you become known as that, people start to come to you because it's an easy thing for them to understand you do, and you just do it, and it comes in and it goes out, it comes in, it goes out, whatever that is, right? That's your bread and butter. The second layer is the cows. I call it, there's different books out there. One of the things I've heard them calls is the cows. They're like bigger than the bread and butter, but they're not huge clients. They're not huge customers. They're bigger purchases. You want more of those, but they don't come around all the time. So you might get a cow once a month, or you might get a cow once a quarter, depending on your sales and how everything works. You might get a good size sale, and that's a good deal because it's like a bonus. That's it, right? And then the next layer, which is the final layer, the elephant. You know, there's different ways to think about it, but the elephant is a huge sale. Elephants take a long time to get them to buy because it's a big decision. Lots of people are usually involved, larger dollar amounts, all that stuff, and it just doesn't come around all the time. So usually, I find that an elephant will come around once a year. Give or take, might be a year and a half, might be 2 years. But if you put yourself in a position and you position yourself right over time, you'll get an elephant about once a year, give or take. So I then would say, Chris, what is your elephant? So I would start there. I would start, who is your elephant? What would be an elephant that you want to go after? Maybe it's every Walmart in the United States. Maybe it's every high-end retail store in the United States. So some places in the country have a place called Wegmans. Some places have a country around the country have a place called HEB. Some places have Publix. Some place there's nice high-end.
Oh, and there's King Supers in Colorado.
Yeah, and those are the types of companies that you could say they're regional players. You can get in there, but they're elephants. They're going to be hard to get in. It's going to take you some time. Put them on your list. Start to go after them. It takes time. You're going to have to nurture it. You're going to have to get there. You have to do a lot of different things to get in front of the right people. But eventually you'll get one, and maybe the next year you get the next, and the next year you get the next. That's fine. Put that on your list. The second thing is I would go and say, what's the bread and butter of this? So any strip mall, any mall, any like even movie theaters, you can go some of the little shopping plazas that you have around the town. Those types of places, apartment complexes, they can be your cows, right? Those are the types of things that you could say, I want the cow, which is your apartment complex. So start to list those out, figure out what those are. And then you start to position yourself as, this is what we're good at. This is what we're known for. And really focus on that B2B area. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Do you have a question about sales? Call or text your question at 608-708-SLOW. That's 608-708-7569. Or you can email them to questions@theslowpitch.com. Now, back to the show.
I wonder if we should go back and talk a little bit about the B2C is why we kind of feel it may not be the best avenue. I kind of feel that if when you go to buy an electric car, I think the manufacturers and the dealerships might already have something in place to get you to buy something along with their car. You know, I think you would really have to be ahead of the game and ahead of someone's thought process that they're going to go buy an electric car and try to get in front of them before they actually go make that purchase and buy a bundle from the dealership.
Yeah, that's a good point. And if the dealership's not already, they will be, right? I mean, that's an obvious.
Yeah.
Obvious thing for them. And I think that leads to one of the questions that Chris asked, which is I'd be interested in knowing which social media you think I should target my audience with, because that kind of gets you into that positioning in front of them in terms of if you're starting to Google, now you can retarget, you can get in front of those. Yes, you can do that. My question becomes, what's the budget? Where are you going to do it? How are you going to do it? Like, there's a lot of questions that come up, because if your budget's huge, then fine, no problem. You can do it all you want.
Yeah.
If I were in Chris's shoes or in that company's shoes, I would do this. I would start to optimize my website so heavily, meaning content. I don't mean like just start putting keywords everywhere on your website. I mean content. Blog posts, answering questions, constantly answering questions that are obviously being searched. Because in 3, 4, 5, 6 years, from now, you will be the authority in electric vehicles because of all the questions you've answered. And if you position yourself now, you'll get those people searching when they're out there searching, because they'll find you first. That's the key. Just find them on social media today. For the ones that are looking today, you're going to spend a lot of money doing that. And it's not a bad thing. You can do it. If you have the cash and you want to do that and spend the time doing it, you can do it. And if you say, what's social media? It really goes back to, again, what's the demographic? Is Facebook the right area? Is LinkedIn the right area? Like, my initial gut feeling is I would target on LinkedIn, and I would find specific positions, CEO, CFO, the C categories, right? The C-suites. Those are the people I would be targeting first, because they're the ones buying it right now. You're not finding, somebody that has their own small business who's just started out. You're just not finding those people. They're not the ones that are probably going to be buying a new Tesla or a new other electric vehicle, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Somewhat. There's no question. There's plenty of them out there. There's tons of good, great people that have started a second business and blah, blah, blah. But in the end, that if they're a C-suite position in a decent sized company, and you have to narrow that all down, you can spend the money and find those people. I don't know that I would go on Nextdoor. I don't know that I would go on Twitter. I don't think I'd go on any of those other ones. I would focus my efforts on SEOing my website so that you're positioned for the long term. That's how I would look at it. I'm going to stop this conversation right now. If you're finding value in any one of our episodes, we want you to share it with somebody else. Just tell somebody, hey, go listen to these guys. This has been good. Second, give us a review. Tell us what you think. And the third thing, hit that subscribe button so that you always get updated every time we release an episode.
We'd really appreciate it. Now back to the show.
You know, one other thought that comes to mind is, especially when you're talking about the B2C or the final end user or the end consumer, if you will, I almost look at this as the automakers, this is their issue really, trying to convince people to buy. They're going to spend all the money to convince people to buy the electric vehicle. The fact that they buy the electric vehicle is more than likely going to dictate that they need a charging station at some point. It's a matter of convenience at this point, right? So in the beginning, when they first buy it, they can go tool around town and find a station around them somewhere and charge it up. But they're going to want one at home pretty quickly thereafter if they don't plan ahead and do it beforehand. So I would think that you're going to need that. I think the reason why I would say the B2C group is not who you're going to go after is because the automakers are going to start to try to solve that problem at some point. I think it's the automakers who are going to start to add this on to their packages to say, you also probably need an electric vehicle charging station. And I think that's where you could come in. You could start making these deals with these automakers as well, if it's not already there. That's where, I think, Lane, you mentioned it earlier, that's where you could start to really focus on from the B2B standpoint to get that kind of a sale. I just don't feel like the B2C is the place to go unless there's a big up market for, I've already bought my car, I don't know what to do with it. I don't see a lot of people doing that. I don't think I would buy that way. I wouldn't buy a car without knowing what I'm going to do to charge it. Unless it's a gas powered as well, then I might go, all right, I'll figure it out. But it's unlikely for me to do that. And I don't think many others would do the same. So I hope that helps in terms of separating out who is your target audience by the bread and butter type, the cows, and the elephants. I think that's one area you need to focus on, really figuring out and identifying what the problems are that each of those types of businesses that are in the B2B category, what are their problems? What are the pains you're trying to solve? And then crafting those questions in reverse. If they're saying that their issue with not buying these charging stations is because the dollar for the investment is way too high, there's another issue going on. There's not enough pain there. And so the question that you might need to ask to address that might be, at what point will you have enough demand, do you think, to warrant at least one charging station? Do you think next year, 3 years, 5 years, or 10 years? And it'll be interesting to see what kind of answers you get, because when you start to do that, you start to learn where everybody thinks things are going to happen. And there's nothing wrong with sharing articles with people once you've talked to them. So if you talk to them and you say, hey, let me show you this article that's saying in 2025, these companies are going to be 100% electric. That's significant. And I don't think I realized that until I read the article. I don't think a lot of other people realize that either, as if you're an apartment complex or any other B2B kind of a situation. So start to think about how you would craft those questions that address the issues that is stopping them from buying, and then position questions so that they then understand how important that this is coming up. And it's coming. I mean, if you haven't seen enough electric vehicles around you, just wait. It's coming. I guarantee you it will be here soon.
Yeah, I completely agree, Rob. Well, Chris, thank you very much for your question. We really, really do appreciate it. You know, Rob and I have learned a little bit about electric cars with this, and that's always nice. We'd really love to hear from any of our other listeners as well. If you have a question, please, by all means, reach out to us at questions@theslowpitch.com. You can also call or text us at 608-708-SLOW. That's 608-708-7569.
Thank you for listening to The Slow Pitch. Slow down and close more.